Join us for the Criterion Institute podcast as Joy Anderson, a global thought leader in business and social change, leads us through a series of discussions, interviews, frameworks, rants, and reframes that will help you better understand how to use finance as a tool for transformative systems change.
I am Joy Anderson, and this is the Criterion Institute podcast. Today, I'm speaking about systemic risk with Teresa Wells, Managing Director of Alti Global. Alti has been a significant supporter of Criterion Tiedemann before the merger, both sponsoring our conference Convergence and bringing their significant financial research to bear on topics that we're wrestling with. Also, I have the extraordinary pleasure of having Teresa on Criterion's board of directors. In fact, she was just elected to be chair of our board. We have to look at the systemic risk that finance is creating in and through its systems. That was the surprising place that this conversation with Teresa landed. So often we're developing new solutions, new ways of deploying capital, and yet we still hold ourselves to antiquated norms and benchmarks in what we're doing. We judge ourselves against traditional finance as we are creating solutions so that we are not in traditional finance anymore. It's so strange. It's so simple to me, though, that we just need to make different choices together. And less people who have power are making those different choices. It's not going to move the needle. More is possible in all kinds of different ways. So the segments of my conversation with Teresa explore the evolving understanding of risk in investment decisions and the impact of systemic risks on financial systems. We highlight the shift from solely focusing on the risk of losing money to considering social and environmental risks as existential risks. Then we emphasize the short-termism of financial decision-making and the need to reevaluate benchmarks that might not align with our long-term goals. We discuss the importance of better data and those key nuggets of data that can highlight what are the systemic risks created by things like gender inequality and climate change. Again, highlighting the need for brave analysis, for brave decision-making, and the power of making different choices. Finally, we conclude with a discussion of one of the research areas we've been wrestling with together, looking at representation versus equity in leadership and the possibility of retention as a metric for companies that are good for women and diverse gender identities. Enjoy. So let's start with risk, because it's sort of universally thought of that people in investments care about risk. Agree? Disagree, Teresa? What do you think?
I would agree.
And so why do they care about risk?
We used to always care about risk fundamentally because we were worried about the risk of losing money on making an investment, right? That was the primacy. I think that's evolved quite a bit anymore. So a lot of folks who are investing with an intentionality towards either social, environmental, or both kind of benefit are equally concerned or have equal risk in their minds about continuing to perpetuate or maybe further enhance or create social or environmental risk with their financial decisions. So I think in many cases, it's not just about the loss of capital that they're worried about. It's around an erosion of the benefit that they were trying to create or actually like being part of the problem.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I think people used to think about that only at the company level. Like, is this company doing good? Is this company doing bad? But the climate and systemic inequity, sort of broader systems issues, are not actually at the company level, right? They're, companies might be contributing to the problem, but they also might just be swimming in the soup of a broader issue and you can't quite differentiate it. And so that shifts how you think about risk, right? If you're looking at sort of systemic issues in the world and how you think about your investments, that changes from, I don't want to be in bad companies, to, oh crap, what do we do about the world?
Entire industries, right? Or more broadly, like, yeah, I got around the entire world. And I think, you know, when I think of systemic risk, the challenge there in a lot of cases is that most investors are making an investment with a bit of a myopic mindset, right? They're looking at like what's going to happen kind of quarter over quarter, maybe even year over year, but they're not looking at, what am I doing today to invest in such a way that will protect me and the planet and my portfolio from events that will happen 20 years from now? And so it's a bit of a time horizon conundrum. And frankly, like, financial systems have created this, right? So one could think of the financial system as its own kind of like systemic risk or systemic problem, in that it's too short-sighted for these huge, again, like systemic risks that are present in the world today, as well as, you know, coming down the pike.
Well, and it creates its own noise, right? So in some ways, the financial system is supposed to be looking at the world, valuing it and figuring it out. But if these short-term quarterly reporting then mean a lot of the disclosures that companies are making are just gaming the system to fall within the disclosures and get before the quarterly earnings report, and then that creates a set of noise, then our financial systems are not actually giving us the signals that we need. They're creating volatility on their own, not just the volatility in the world. Like, oh my gosh, there's going to be a war. That's a systemic issue in the world that's going to create volatility. But in some ways, the pricing system is what actually creates that volatility.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly enough, I think, one, making an acknowledgement, there is some positive aspects to that, right? One thing about like our publicly traded markets is that regulation requires that level of transparency. Transparency is helpful, right? We want to be able to like know what's going on inside of these companies so that we can make informed decisions. The challenge is that if we're only looking, you know, it causes not only investors to be of the mindset of like what's happening on a quarter over quarter basis, it also causes the companies themselves to behave in ways and make decisions on a quarter over quarter basis. And they're going to be making decisions in order to meet a particular quarterly earnings cycle, which might benefit them in that short window, but it would, you know, but would detriment them over a much longer window of time, right? They might be making a cost conscious decision in order to make sure that they're making that earnings cycle happen today. But in making that decision, they're actually harming practices. They're making shortcuts. They're doing other things that wouldn't necessarily meet their longer term objectives. And so I think sometimes like what we've done is we've kind of created this mechanism that, again, has positives around transparency, around better kind of clarity and reporting. But on the other side, it forces us into this really, really short-term kind of goal-making exercise that really is not inclusive of these broader, longer-term, huge risks that are still coming.
And so if we imagined how to get out of that myopic nature and really think about how, if we looked with a long term, if we were investing in a long term, how would we provide capital in such a way that companies were able to respond to the long term, which might be just different kinds of financing. It might be different kinds of structures. It might be different ways of doing valuation that really look at incenting that longer view.
Yeah. I mean, your mouth to God's ears. I think the challenge that we have a little bit there, right, is it requires investors to look at their capital decisions with a longer term point of view, ignore some of that shorter term noise, if you will. And what we've seen is that a lot of investors have started to migrate in this direction. They've moved away even from like equity markets largely into things where they are able to direct capital in a way that more closely aligns with what they're trying to put out into the world. What it kind of brings to my mind, Joy, is, and I know I've talked to you about this before, like one of my biggest pain points is really the idea of market-based institutionalized benchmarks. So many investors are making investment decisions based off of these arbitrary indexes that someone created at one point in time and subscribed a meaningful amount of value to it, to the point where now so many large institutional portfolios are holding out everything that they're trying to do, even if they are trying to move it all in alignment with mission or with some particular kind of intentional value. And then they're still subscribing to like this S&P 500 benchmark as like a litmus test for whether or not they're achieving success. And even in this common era, I don't understand, especially now, that index overall, because of its very nature and construction, is really showing you like whether or not you're beating seven stocks that most of the time aren't even impact portfolios. So why are you subscribing that as your benchmark of success or of value that you're creating in your portfolio? And again, this just comes back to like some of the systemic risks of finance itself, because we've created these elements that are moving us away from like the value that we're actually trying to have with these portfolios. So,
and that just comes back. And I remember sitting on the board of a foundation. I mean, I sat on the board of a foundation for about 10 years, and that issue bugged me every time. I was like, why are you reporting to how we're marking to benchmarks that we just decided in our last decision didn't reflect what we thought was important as investors? And they're like, well, it's food for thought. I'm like, well, what if it's not food for thought anymore? What if it's actually a signal that is sending me off on the wrong track? Because I think this is where investors can use their power, right? They can sit in those meetings and say, no, that isn't a meaningful benchmark. Take it out of the reports. Don't give me another benchmark. Don't tell me why I shouldn't look at it and how I should look at it differently. Just take it out of the reports, because so many of them are misleading.
I completely agree with you. And look, I'm a CFA charter holder. Like I have, you know, two different degrees in finance. My entire like upbringing in this space has been about like doing financial analysis and looking at your relative results, right? Like, how are you benchmarking? Are you using the right benchmarking to kind of give you a good sense about whether or not this solution is the best solution, or if it's actually adhering to the asset allocation that you've presented it with? And like all of those things can still be valid. It's just the challenge that you have is whenever you're looking at that solely as a basis for your decision making, which so many organizations do because it's easy, right? Because we've created something that is very easy for them to understand what it is and to like, and universally everybody has decided that this is the place that we should be benchmarking ourselves to. And so then you get into this space where it's like, oh, well, I don't have decision risk than if I'm looking at myself versus that, because everybody does. But the reality is exactly what you just said, Joy. You will be making decisions outside of an agreed upon framework that you're actually trying to advance because of some arbitrary benchmark that the market told you that you should be adhering to. So I think that also is another systemic risk.
Okay. All right, you may have finally just won your point, Teresa, that you and I debate about all the time, which is why we need a set of data about companies that are addressing gender inequalities. Because what if we had a benchmark, right? Part of the problem of a lot of these issues, like particularly gender inequality, is there's no alpha because everybody's bad, right? There's no like, I could find a great company and it will give me outsized performance because I'm picking a winner when everybody has the same behavior on it, right? We're all in the same soup. And so if we could start saying, what are the benchmarks that are driving around these systemic, the systemic issues in the world? Why are we looking at gender inequalities? Why are we looking at racial injustice? How are we looking at climate and other pieces to say, what if that's what our benchmarks were organized around, starting with an assumption that those are systemic risks to our investments, short-term, long-term, to our lives and our livelihood. And that's why we need better data about companies, but tied to a different benchmark, just not tied to the same one.
Yay. Yes. I mean, it's interesting because like there is a big topic right now on climate. We'll go with climate because it's easier, right, Joy? It's like, you know, it's science. We figured out ways to measure certain level of carbon emissions of companies. And now the SEC has finally come around and said like, yep, we're going to require all this reporting. We know what's going to be measured. We know how it's going to be measured. Didn't go quite as far as many of us would like it to be, but it's a great first step. And now, if you want to be a publicly traded company in the United States of America, the SEC requires that your annual reporting is reflective of this level of reporting. These are, systematic in terms of how they're calculated, because it's very clear and it's required in all of the reports. So we can be able to look at and compare various different companies on a whole new level of analysis and evaluating something as a systemic risk as big as climate change, right? And so if that is your method, then now we finally will have an amassed group of data that allows us to make informed decisions one company over another in terms of how they're performing on these elements of systemic risk. What we don't have, and what you and I have talked about a lot, Joy, is that like today there is not consensus around what is that data as it pertains to gender or racial equity, LGBTQ values, other elements of social justice within a company framework. We don't have something as easy as like type 1 or type 2 carbon emissions, but we could.
We could. We could. And it will take time. And this is where in the end, it's maybe the part that I love most about finance is it is a lot of data and it's just a series of calculations. And some of the calculations are super duper smart. And some of them are really dumb and masking a whole bunch of like self-interest and let's keep the system working the way it does just because it's easier for me to, whether it's easier for me to have the same spreadsheet or my last fund did well against that benchmark, so please don't change the benchmark. But somewhere in the middle of this is a bunch of people who really love to crunch numbers and figure out different ways to think about things. And that needs to be more in service of some big questions and not just the little ones.
Agreed. I completely agree. Completely agree. I mean, there's so many different, look, there are, I forget what the number is now, but I think there's like something like 100 or 1,000 times more index oriented funds than there are publicly traded stocks. So it just means, right, again, like there's way more words even in the English language than there are the 26 letters in our alphabet. Just to think about it kind of similarly. But
okay, that's not comparable though, because letters are supposed to make up words and indexes aren't just supposed to trade things in, like, I realize indexes are designed to trade things. There are more indexes than there are publicly traded companies. Is that what you said?
Hundreds more. Hundreds times more.
Hundreds. Boy, these people keep busy, don't they?
That's
right? Like,
sure
that
do.
Just means a lot of people are sitting around figuring out a new formula.
Crunching
what if we
data.
Put that energy to good? I'm sorry. I'm just getting excited here.
I get it, Joy. I hear you, right? And there are hundreds, dozens and dozens and dozens of different ways that people have incorporated, quote unquote, ESG into these indexes in one way or another. Now, again, it requires a careful, watchful eye to evaluate like what that actually means and whether it means anything at all.
And but, whether that's the more simple math, and then there's another thing that's more complex math.
It's correct. Right. What we talked about before, too, is like you can use the easy metrics that people use all the time for something like gender, which you and I both agree is not a valuable exercise in, frankly, just counting how many people are sitting in a management seat or how many people are sitting on a board. Great. Representation matters. It's just not the only thing. And it's not necessarily getting us where we need to be. And so if instead we could actually, like, again, align on what is the data that would really inform us about one versus the other, and then, again, align on how that calculation methodology needs to be underdone, because we need to make sure that it is systematic, that everyone has to follow the exact same procedure for how it is collected and measured, and then reported out to everyone. Like, I feel like then we actually have the data that we can need to make enriched decisions.
I think that's true. And I think the piece that goes right along maybe with it, and maybe wrapping this up in conclusion, the piece that goes right alongside are the benchmarks. Because if I learn something different in an index that's tracking to a different norm, then I'm still going to be compared to the benchmarks, which requires a set of people to be brave and not just have this confirmation bias of what I saw last year that fit to that benchmark is the same thing that's going to happen this year, but rather to say, let's get to some more hypotheses about the world. And that just takes a level of what you call decision risk, right? The willingness to say, I'm going to step outside of the decision that everybody else has made, assuming that this might have an outcome that's different in the longer term and maybe even in the shorter term.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, I have an interesting story around this. And it's actually, it's wonderful. And it's also sad because it expresses like doing something different and also still living within this system. And so there's a strategy that we were an early investor in, and we collaborated really closely with the manager that was kind of like fostering and coming up with the strategy. The strategy is so unique is that it actually like takes in anonymized survey data by women who worked in various different Fortune 500 and publicly traded companies. The woman who curated this data was a behavioral scientist. And frankly, the way that this data was actually collected is women on a job site looking to find gainful employment in an organization that actually treats women right. And so she's got hundreds of thousands of entries from women who have worked across every single company within the publicly traded markets in the United States. So tons and tons of great data. This manager that we're working with has licensed this data from her in order to prioritize his investment strategy. And what he wants to do is he's actually prioritizing those companies within each sector that have the best scores of places to work by Black women. And the thesis is if Black women are treated well within an organization, chances are good that Black men are treated well within the organization and all the other women are treated well as well. Just because we're using, again, historical norms, unfortunate historical norms. Anyway, that strategy is really like, you know, and you and I have talked about this before, Joy, being able to get that kind of curated, really rich data of someone's actual lived experience inside of an organization is gold, right? You're not going to be able to pull any particular metric out that's
so
as good as
this story has a happy ending.
Yeah. So this strategy we've funded and it has tons and tons of money that's going into these companies that prioritize those women in the organization. The strategy is doing incredibly well. I've even said to the woman who curates the data, you know, this data is a goldmine. You should think about creating an index with this data. Like this is so important and useful in the world, which is something that she's contemplating. But the challenge, I guess, the beautiful thing about this is that there are people who are trying to figure out ways to do this better. And in this particular instance, this investment manager is absolutely using better data to make informed decisions about which companies you want to be in and not. And the rub is he still has to benchmark it to the S&P 500.
Wow.
Because everybody needs a benchmark. So that strategy up 23% last year, but it underperformed the benchmark because it doesn't have NVIDIA.
So one more piece of evidence that as we're looking and trying to address systemic risks in the world, we have to look at the systemic risk that finance is creating in its very systems.
So many times we're developing new solutions, new ways of deploying capital, but yet we still hold ourselves to these antiquated norms around how we're doing. We still have to like judge ourselves against traditional finance when the whole reason why we're creating those solutions is so that we're not in traditional finance anymore.
Yep.
It
just feels so simple to me, though, that a set of people just need to make different choices. And unless people who have power are making different choices, it's not going to shift the needle at some point. So let's go get those people to make different choices and show them that more is possible in all kinds of different ways. So one of the forms of systems change that we need to address is how to do organizational systems change, right? Like some of the broader systems change that we want to have happen happens because organizations change. And I think one of the ways that you and I are common is, okay, maybe I run a wacky think tank and you sit in a big institution, but I'm also committed to those big institutions. Like for me, New York City Public Schools, like a million students, like sitting in a big institution and seeing how we could change it, what drove me. And still to this day, we work in governments, we work in big institutions because the big institutions already have the scale. But changing them is hard. So what do you think creates organizational change inside of those big institutions?
I think it's a few things. I think it requires deep support, collaboration, and inclusivity of the stakeholders. So I think the deep support and collaboration typically needs to happen amongst a group of women and allies that we may have to have curated and or created through intentional inclusion and awareness building around the different life experiences between men and women and the different systemic norms.
And so what happens in that collaboration? What happens in that deep collaboration that makes it work?
Well, I think women need to acknowledge and collaborate and support other women in these systems where we're still woefully unrepresented or underrepresented. But I think in order to make the change really happen, it requires women to be courageous enough to stand up against power dynamics and norms in a way that does continue to push for change, but also acknowledges how the norms have affected every person within that society. And so doing so in a way that is balanced while still pushing hard for change.
So it doesn't mean that you don't get angry or pissed off. It just means how you handle that is strategic, right? Like it doesn't
strategic.
Mean suck it up and play along. It means pick your battles.
It means be prepared for your battles. Being strategic is not running into a battle mad. Being strategic is being fact-based, professional, and prepared for those conversations. It doesn't mean you're backing down. It means you're showing up ready. And if you truly believe in where you are and what you are bringing to that conversation, to that table, you don't have to be mad because you're right.
Well said. One of the things that you've pushed Criterion on for years now, Teresa, is in our partnerships around gender-based violence. And thank you, know, you've just been incredible collaborator on that. And there's lots of ways that gender-based violence is incredibly complicated and complex and ingrained and multifaceted. And yet for to get the airtime, to get the visibility, to get attention, we need data. And so pushing for a data point, something we've been doing together for a long time, right? What is the data point that we should look at in companies? So retention, do you think that can work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I learned about this from the research at Criterion and some of the other projects that you all have been involved in. And it does seem like something that is oftentimes data that is collected in every organization. Retention ratios, particularly broken down by demographics of their employee base, is something that is could be systematically and easily collected in terms of data. It could be measured and reported on very consistently, and it would give us a good indication of a better indication, frankly, of what the organization looks like in terms of equity, in terms of safety, within that organization across various different demographics. I think it would be a way more valuable piece of data than the only thing that's collected now, which is counting members.
Or leadership, right? That women in leadership is what makes a difference.
That's right. And unfortunately, I don't know that all women in leaders, like all women leaders, have a prioritization of making sure that it's an inclusive and safe environment for all women, unfortunately.
So that is there's decent correlations out there, but they're just correlations. It isn't an assumption. Because there's a woman in leadership, things will be fair and just.
I think we could look to Washington, D.C., and there's some prime examples there of how women who are in leadership positions in this country don't necessarily have women's best interests in mind. So, you know, why would we assume that that isn't translating over into the broader kind of corporate American economy? That's not it. And so I think representation does matter. And I think that over time that will continue to matter. But I think for a better indication about the health of an organization, if you're trying to make informed decisions about one versus another company and how well women are treated in there and are they safe, are they treated equitably, I do think that there's got to be a different metric for that evaluation. And it seems to me like from the research that I've read within Criterion, that retention information could be a critical data point.
And so... not a super hard change, right? Lots of things are really difficult. Figuring out how do we take a data point and elevate it is a doable thing. It's what finance knows how to do.
Correct. Look, we've done a lot of data to see whether or not representation actually makes a big difference in terms of financial return. I think that there's a possibility where we could actually like take other data sets and make even more informed decisions.
Yep. Let's go do that.
Let's do that.
All righty. Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you, Joy.
To learn more about our work, visit us at criterioninstitute.org. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Your reviews help our podcast reach a wider audience. Thanks for listening.